there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I have somebody, if you've been listening to the pre-chat, which I'll probably leave in there, he also has a podcast called the Farmers Market Podcast that I'm super excited to learn about. And he just has a really interesting background. He's done lots of different things, kind of like I have. And now he's getting into farming. And so he's going to talk to us about some of the success he's had. So from South Carolina, welcome Stephen Holt.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, your energy is just contagious, and I'm so excited. You hear about all these cool things that you've got going on, and then about your, you know, market farming journey. So you kind of told us a little bit about yourself in the pre-chat, but why don't you tell us a little bit more? Like, so you're in South Carolina now, and you have... Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, I'm in South Carolina. I'm a local because I've been here the longest. I actually grew up in the military. My dad was in the military, the Army, for about 30 plus years. So Stefan is not a typical U.S. name. I'm actually part German, but obviously I'm a citizen. So my background is basically when I was growing up, it was in the military. I'm an Army brat. A lot of people know me as that. But my career, as far as once I left school, high school, and went to college, it was mainly in broadcast television, local TV stations, some network stuff, and then mainly and heavily into digital media and marketing. And so that led me to a nice little stint with a fragrance company. That's a whole nother story. I'm always appreciative of all the experiences I've had because they always lead up to the next thing. And you can always pull from them. But that has led me since to being a marketing director for a finance company. So that's what I'm currently doing. But in the past 2 years, I've got what they call the bug for farming. And I've been market garden style farming for the past 2 years. But, you know, technically you can't really count the first year. You know, because that's your learning year. I say 2 years, but it's really been heavy this past year.
So you went from this pasture to following a plan, I guess, to kind of like start this market farm, and like you're actually like selling at the farmer's market. Like you said, you love lettuce. So you kind of started there. And then I see there's like a list of crops on your website. I don't know, just tell us about like that transition from like pasture to producing food.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's not easy, I can tell you that. And that's the one thing I've always been a hard worker. If you ask people that know me, I'm a kind of get it done kind of guy. I can have fun, but I like work. I think work is a good thing for people to have. And so starting out, this pasture was really a pasture for horses. And we had a couple horses on the farm, and it's SCA Farms. And you can find us on scafarms.com. We're out there, like you said, on the website. But it started out as a pasture for these horses. The horses since left and went to another barn because our daughter's in the barrel racing and all that good stuff. And it just made sense. So I'm looking outside. I see this field. And I'm like, okay, I got to do something. It's either got to have animals on it or it's got to have something growing in it, because I'm a big believer in things have a purpose, whether it be for watching and beauty and relaxing, or whether it's producing something and actually doing something that's positive. I'm a big believer in that. And I've learned since farming, everything has a purpose, and everything that doesn't have a purpose is kind of wasteful. And so the process in turning the pasture into a productive field for crops really started by me doing some research with what can I do with limited equipment? I don't have a tractor. I'll tell you, there's a funny story. I was so close to getting one of these big farm. I think it was I forgot the name of the tractor. It was a big tractor. I was so close, put a down payment, everything. And then something fell through and I couldn't get it. And the gentleman that was selling it at a discount, his daughter was going on a mission trip. And the reason they were selling it so cheap is because they needed the money, you know, as soon as possible. I told him, you know what, just keep the money I gave you. And, you know, I wish you guys the best. But I missed out on my opportunity to get a big tractor. And I kind of regret it, but I don't, because now I understand what it really means to farm by putting your hands in the dirt and doing it the old school way, the manual way. But I started out just doing research. And a lot of the research that I was doing was on other farmers who had done it, you know, what they bootstrapped it. They did it from scratch. I used tarps for over the winter in my first year. And that basically got rid of a lot of the grass. The grass basically just decomposed right underneath the tarp and allowed the microorganisms to kick in. And so when people ask me, why'd you do it that way? Well, I am not a big believer in spraying and pesticides and putting chemicals on anything. And my wife will tell you, you know, the stuff we eat at the stores, you kind of don't know what's been sprayed on it in some regards. And so the whole idea of eating organic and knowing what I'm growing and how I'm growing it, I'm able to relay that to other people and say, I don't use any of this stuff. The pests that come in here, you'll probably see some bites in the leaves and you'll probably see this, but the reality of it is it's about as organic as you're going to get. And that I start with the organic seeds. I basically grow it, no spray. The only thing I spray is water. And so that's kind of how I started.
So let's back up a sec, because I usually always start at the show asking about your very first gardening experience. And since you grew up in the military, like, what was your first gardening experience? Was it this pasture when you got it growing, or like, did you grow like with your grandparents when you were little or something? Or like, how did you learn how to, like, what was your first gardening experience to begin with? You know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? Like, what'd you grow?
I will tell you, when growing up in the military, you kind of hop from place to place. And
yeah,
we never really, we stayed on base on most, well, I say that. And even when we weren't on base, I think my whole high school, I spent in overseas in Germany. And we were in a little town. I never really had an experience where, okay, we're going to grow this season. We're going to grow and we're going to plant in this field. My dad always did little stuff around the house, but my grandma, and she has since passed, but my grandma, she had a garden. When we would go visit her, she had a garden in the back of her yard, and it was a pretty big yard. I wouldn't say it was an acre, but it was fairly big. At least it was when I was a little kid. That's what it always seems that way. But she used to grow stuff all the time, and she always made. She would get fresh blackberries, and she made this blackberry cobbler that I loved. Mm-hmm. And that was me growing up. We didn't spend a whole lot of time, is in the town of Clarksville in Tennessee. We didn't spend a whole lot of time with her. But when we did, those are the things I remember. She always wore that, and you know this, the old school smock, is it the smock? It's kind of like a one piece. And now this is my grandma, but she would wear boots and that smock. And she'd go out, I mean, she would be in the house cooking breakfast. And then she'd go out to the garden and do some stuff in the garden. And that's what she would wear like all day. So it just reminded me like the old school. I think she had a little bit of Indian in her, because as she got older, the wrinkles and everything else. But she reminds me of like old school farming women, you know, pretty hardy stock. They don't mind to get dirty. And I guess I wouldn't say it's in my genes, because my dad, he does the tomato plants. He plants all kinds of stuff at his house down in Columbia. But I think it's in the genes. I never really had an experience growing up. It's just now that I'm doing it and I can see, I have four kids. you lose track. After about two, you lose track. So I have four kids, two boys, two girls. And when you're raising kids, it's the same thing when you're raising plants. You grow them from nothing. I mean, they're a baby. They're defenseless. The seed, it's defenseless. It's either going to grow or it's not. And then when you plant it in the ground and you see that little seedling, it's just like a little child. And that you watch and you water that seedling and you teach your children. And then you watch them grow up and they become somewhat of a mature plant, much like your teenage kids. They start growing up and becoming adults. And then at the you know, not that you're going to eat your kids, but when you see your plant grow up, it's a very similar experience that you know what it took to raise and grow your produce. And there's a special attachment to that. And if you can share that with somebody, much like when you're raising children, you grow them up so that when they go into the world, they make a difference. You're doing the same thing when you're growing vegetables. You're hoping that you grow your vegetables so that when they go out into the world, whether it be your dinner plate tonight or somebody else's, that they make a difference in somebody's lives, you know, and they make a difference in the world. So I know that's a very philosophical answer to your question, but that's how I feel when I'm growing stuff.
Well, I think a lot of my listeners are going to be able to relate to that. And I think we all, you know, feel a little bit of a part of that. Like, that's why we're interested in organic gardening and eating healthy food. And I definitely have, I feel, an audience that's, like, I call them the green future growers, because they're interested in growing a greener future and making our world a better place. And it's not, we're not just, you know, we're more interested in, you know, building a sustainable, you know, sustainable agriculture practices that are going to, you know, protect our planet and care for the planet, you know, care for the earth, not just, you know, growing for, to make money or just because it's cheaper to grow your own food, which I don't know. Sometimes I look at Mike and I'm like, seriously, those green beans must cost like $95 a piece if you add in all the labor. I'm just like, no, seriously, I'm like, oh my gosh, how much time and how much energy have you put into these green beans, which are absolutely delicious, but boy, are they time consuming to produce, I think. But, you know,
no,
I'm the organic eater at our house. I'm not the organic gardener at our house. I've certainly learned a lot of things, but some things I look at my husband, I'm like, oh my gosh, you are dedicated. So,
well, yeah, it takes a certain caliber of person to be out there day in and day out. And I didn't realize it, how hard and strenuous. I mean, you'll lose weight. Anybody want a weight loss program? The weight loss program is grow your own food. I mean, that you're going to lose weight. So I didn't know that when I started, but I do know that the work, and you never see it until the end. After you've done it like once or twice and you see a crop come in and then you go out and you harvest it and then you repeat, kind of rinse and repeat. Mm-hmm. Once you see that happen one time, you have confidence in yourself that you can do it again and you can replicate it. And then it becomes, oh, well, can I do it with not only lettuce, can I do it with arugula? Hey, arugula grows really well in South Carolina. I can do this with arugula. Can I do it with kale? Yeah, I can do it. Hey, this really works. You know, so you start to build confidence over time that you know what seeds that you're purchasing, non-GMO, organic, you know where you're getting them from, your supplier. And then you know the steps to take in order to nurture that plant in order to have a bountiful harvest. So, I mean, I'm going to the Carolina Farm Steward conference in Durham in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to meet a lot of folks that are going to have a varying, I mean, they're going to have a wide variety of different beliefs on why they grow and what they grow and how they grow it. But it's all pretty much the same when you boil it down. It's people trying to grow the most healthy food that they can possibly grow wherever they are.
Yeah. Oh, so much of what you said is so true, because I've been looking at Mike's mini farm. And so we always had really limited water. And then back, I don't remember when, in 2013, I think we dug a deep well. And so now we generally have water, although it still seems like, so we have two wells, the shallow well and the old well. It still seems like one of them was almost always running out. Not last year, last summer, I think we're finally getting it. And so, but I would look at this giant mini farm that he built, and I'm like, how are we ever going to produce enough food to feed other people? It's so hard even still to produce enough food for us. But then I'm realizing, like, just like you said, like, he's pretty much got the potatoes down. Like, I think he grew enough potatoes this year. I think he collected like 250 pounds of potatoes. If that doesn't last the two of us a year, we're in trouble, even though we eat a lot of potatoes. But, you know, and potatoes are right. One of the ones you really want organic, because they're in the soil. They're, you know, you want if you're buying potatoes, you know they're on that list of the dirty dozen. And then like kale was a big one for me this year. This is the first year I've ever grown Lucento kale, and I will probably grow that until I die. And I don't think I'm ever going to grow spinach again, because for us, where we are, kale, it grew from May until I am still harvesting it here in November. I'm still going down and eating kale. I'm still eating Swiss chard. Those grow really well for me. Arugula grows really well here. And so we're learning what things grow really well and other things that just we cannot get to take off here. Like we really struggle with tomatoes because it doesn't seem to matter how early he puts them in, they just don't ripen before they freeze. And we do have like a box full of tomatoes on my kitchen table still today, cherry tomatoes that he did harvest this year. But down in the garden, there's tons of, they just didn't make it. Like tomatoes are a really hard one. Corn, he was so close this year, had a great crop of corn, but it's a challenge in our climate. So I think so much of what you're saying, and then we've got that bug. Like I'm like, well, I know I can grow kale. I know this kale grows good. It's easy to grow. See, to me, like now kale, now there's a bumper crop. And not only that, like who knew how healthy kale was? I mean, I guess people did, but I didn't realize that kale was so much healthier than Swiss chard. So even though I like the Swiss chard taste better, so then I just put like, you know, some kale and a lot of Swiss chard, and that's what I eat all the time. I'm practically part rabbit or something though. So anyway, so no. Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year for you?
Yeah, sure. Well, several things grew really well. Arugula grows well here as well. That, without a doubt, I can get arugula crop. I mean, if not every week, it's pretty much every other week. And it just does really well in this climate. Now, we're in the kind of the upstate area of South Carolina. If you know where Greenville's at, it's kind of 2 hours from Charlotte going one way and 2 hours going from Atlanta the other way. And we're right there, basically near Clemson. If anybody's a football fan, they know Clemson won the national championship a couple of years ago. But that's where we're at. We're right in the upstate. It's a very rich area. It's just down from Asheville, about an hour or so from Asheville, hour and a half. And we're in a very good climate where arugula grows well. There's a lettuce I like to grow. It's called Green Ice, and it's recommended by, we're so fortunate here in this area. We have Clemson University, and they have an extension program, and they're always putting out information about good crops to grow in certain areas in South Carolina, especially in this area. So I grow a variety of lettuce called Green Ice. I also grow the two different types of kale that I grow. I did the Red Russian because I've seen everybody talk about Red Russian. I'm actually partial to a Blue Scotch Curl kale. It grows really well here. And when it gets very mature, it tastes really great. So those are the kind of the three that I kind of, I'd love to be known as the lettuce king of Lawrence County because I'm in Lawrence County. But, I don't have an aspiration of having rows and rows and rows and rows of lettuce. But I like greens. And it's real easy at a farmer's market when you see other farmers who've got red tomatoes. And I do have kind of a bad story about tomatoes. But I don't grow tomatoes necessarily. I do sometimes. It's not my specialty or not what I want to be known for. On the website, you can see that we've done cherry tomatoes and then we've done some other tomatoes. Radishes, I know a lot of folks out there that are listening can grow radishes. And even if you've never tried, they are very easy to grow. I mean, and as long as you have some loose, you know, 1 or 2 inches of deep soil, you'll have a bumper crop of radishes. We did French breakfast radishes this year, and you'll see some of the pictures on the website. They look amazing and they taste great. So radishes grow well.
One little tip about radishes I learned this year that I had no idea. So at the beginning of the season, we're like inundated with radishes. We had so many radishes this year.
Right.
I just happened to see this post on Megan Kane's Creative Vegetable Farmer that she was cooking radishes. I had no idea you could saute radishes, and I eat a ton of sauteed radishes with the Swiss chard and kale at the beginning of the year. That, like this fall, I've been eating them with golden beets mixed in with them. But that was like my go-to recipe this fall, that like, because we always have so many radishes, because like you said, they do grow easy and Mike loves them, but we just seem to always have an abundance of radishes.
I have tried, now that I'm growing vegetables, I have tried, now a lot of people say I'm turning into my dad in some respects, because he did a lot of pickling and all that kind of stuff. I'm getting into pickling and jarring. So I do know you can pickle radishes. I tried it, didn't turn out very well, so I got to figure out a recipe. But I know, like you said, sauteing radishes. I know also roasting radishes. I haven't tried it yet, but
good.
I want to. Yeah, roasting radishes. And then I'm partial to, we have kind of figured out a method of, you know, when you make a salad and you prepare it, we like to, this is just me. I took my cucumbers that I pickled this year, and I had them along with some radishes, along with some carrots, along with some celery, and I basically blend them up in a mixture. So you got this nice kind of very fine type of mixture, and I lay that all over the top of my kale. And then my wife does a vinaigrette, like an oil-based vinaigrette. And we use that, and it's the best salad. I love it. And I can eat that till I'm blue in the face. And I'm not going to say it's contributed to my weight loss, but I got a funny feeling it has. But I'm never starved. I always feel like I've got a full meal, and it just blends up the radishes. So even if you're not, you know, a consumer and you're not eating radishes because you just don't like the taste, it blends them so much though, that they're mixed in with the carrots and the celery, that you don't really notice it. You got a little bit of a taste, but it's blended so well, it just makes it better. That's just one little side note. If you're going to try something, try that.
I like that. I'm sure it tastes good because it's got like that pickle flavor, like the vinegar. It's kind of like a different kind of vinaigrette. That sounds really good.
Yeah, in South Carolina, you can go pretty much to any store and you see all these different relishes, and a lot of people are into that stuff. And maybe it's my German blood too, because, you know, pickles, I'm a big part. You're going to think I'm crazy, but if I see a pickled herring sandwich, I will buy it because I love pickled herring. I don't know why, but I saw it when I was growing up in Germany. I had it when we went to the market. And when I say market, I mean like a German market where they're selling everything. Much like you would see in a big city where they got the fish and you got everything from bread, and it's just lined up with people. But pickled herring and just that pickling, if somebody's got a great recipe that's listening, definitely post it or send it or put it on the website, because I'm dying to try different pickling recipes till I get one right, and then I'm just going to stick with it, because that's, you know, I try to keep it simple on the farm. I don't want to complicate things. So, because when you start complicating it, it causes you to think and work more, and then you lose energy, and I'd rather pour that energy into the plants.
That's a great kind of like bit of advice there. Keep it simple. Don't complicate things. I always talk about that, and keep it small. You know, start small. Don't, which sounds like you started off gigantic right off the bat. But
No, I didn't. That's funny, because I tell you I'm on 12 acres, but I'm planting in about 2 acres. But you actually know where I'm planting. It's probably about 40 by 100 feet. That's one plot, and then the other plot's literally 50 by 40. It's not much, but if you're planning intensive, and you know this, market garden style, if you're planning intensive, you know, a 50-foot row of lettuce multiple times in a season will produce a lot of lettuce. Going to that first year, you were asking me about how did I get from pasture to market. The first year, I had no intention of ever going to the market. None. Zip. Zero. Because I wanted to do research, because I didn't know what I was doing. This is all new to me. So I started doing research. And sure enough, the things I had planted in March and February started really taking off. And my wife says, you need to go to the market. And I'm like, no, I've got to figure this out. I've got to do some more research. Went to one market, and somebody says, hey, are you a farmer? And I went, you know, you're hesitant at first, because once you say you're a farmer, you're committed. So I said, yes, I have a farm. That's right. I didn't want to give myself the farming classification. So I said, yes, I have a farm. And they're like, hey, we're looking for farmers to be at this market. We'll even let you come for free the rest of the season. And I said, well, let me think about it. I went home, I looked out in the field and went, what am I going to do with all this? I used to have a big family. And I think I told you this, you know, 4 kids, 2 boys, 2 girls, 3 of them are out of the house pretty much. We have 1 left that's in the house. So I don't need to grow a ton of stuff for my family. So I looked out there and I said, you know, let me call them and tell them I'll come this week. And then it's just kind of snowballed. So the 1 week turns into 2 weeks, 2 weeks turns into 3 weeks. People are buying it. I'm telling people, they're enjoying the conversation. They're enjoying the food. And there you go. So that's kind of how that, you know, I guess the progression of starting with something was just an idea to now seeing it. And I'll say this, your listeners should know this. I talk to my kids and I tell them what I'm doing. And, you know, at first they don't get the vision. And you have to have vision if you're planting. You know what I mean? And your husband's probably this way. And everybody that's out there.
My problem is my mom doesn't get the vision. It's not my
right.
kids. Well, they're a whole nother story. They're closer because they live closer to us. My mom's on the other coast, but I feel like she doesn't get the vision. But then she's also like, go to the market. I'm like, we don't have enough stuff to go to the market.
Well, and that
but
I
maybe I'm wrong
this,
about that.
There, well, I went to the market with not. Here's the thing I'm learning too. Last year we went on vacation and kind of messed me up with my systems. This year we went on 3. It just happened. I mean, you don't plan for some of these things. We went on 3 different ones. They were out west. And it really kind of messed up my sink, you know, because once you're planting in the season, you've got things that you got to have done at a certain time. Otherwise, you just get off kilter. So we did. But I ended up at the market with nothing but cucumbers. And I'm not going to tell you how I just ended up with nothing but cucumbers, but I did. And I wasn't going to go, but I had probably 150, 200 pounds of cucumbers. I don't know. It was a lot. And I said, you know what? Let's just go. And you know what? We're going to have fun with this. We're going to have cucumber water for sampling for people. I'm going to take some of the pickling I've done. I'm not going to sell it because you have to, you know, you have to go through the US, you know, USDA and you got to get a commercial kitchen to produce. I'm not going to sell it. If people want to try it, I will let them know what they can, you know, make with our cucumbers. And I'm not kidding you. The cucumber water.
Wait, so you
water,
can bring the pickles if you're not selling them. That's genius. That's what my husband's
Why
always
not?
Said. He's like, we Why should not? Have a bucket of pickles for the kids. And that will get people to your table. And I asked the guy at the cottage food thing, and he said pickles were going to, you know, run into trouble. You would have to, you know, this and that. But that's what my husband's always said, too, is like the pickles would be there for the kids to just give them away to try. Oh, my gosh. My phone just won't stop ringing.
No, that's okay.
Awesome. What a great idea. Sorry.
I just brought it kind of as display because the whole idea and the same thing with the cucumber water. It was a display. It was just to attract people to the stand. They would see the I had 2 different types of cucumbers, but I just wanted them to be able to see other things and to know, you know, we do more than this, but right now it's just cucumbers and they come in big time. And so I would have people come up and say, can I try those? And I go, well, I can't sell them to you, but I can let you try them. And so they would say, hey, these are great. And so I would get people standing at the stand and I said, well, guess what? They were made with these cucumbers right here that you can buy. So, I mean, so again, it's one of those things where until you do it, until you try it, the cucumber water blew our mind. We had people asking us how to make it. We had people, it was just the funniest thing.
My friend DC is a huge, she drinks cucumber water all the time with like fresh mint and things in it. She's really big on cucumber water.
Yeah. I've been in hotels like in Atlanta and other places, New York, and they will have in their fitness rooms, you know, they'll have a big old jug of iced strawberry cucumber water. And it's just there and it looks great and it tastes great. And so I said, why not bring you know, the city in terms of being classy and having this water, why not just bring it to a local market and see what happens? And I'm not kidding, you just get those little, I call them rinse and spit cups. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but you know, when we were growing up, it was, you had to do the fluoride. Do you remember the fluoride?
Yeah, little Probably Dixie not. Cups. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, little tiny Dixie cups. Well, now they make them even smaller. They're like not even enough to hold like a couple of lifesavers. They're ridiculously small. But we just had some of those cups, and we just gave them out water. I mean, it was hot. Why not? And so it was, you had ice cold cucumber water, and people were like, oh, this is great. And it does. It tastes good. It's great. And it smells. You can smell. I mean, you got the smell. We had people walking by, and it was just a conversation starter. And people loved it. People bought cucumbers just because we had the water.
Nice. So, anyway. Awesome. Well, you've been dropping golden seeds all morning so far. So what about something you're excited to do different next year? Like what are you going to do next season?
Well, what I'm planning on doing, and I'm doing it right now, and you know about this, is the podcast. We're doing a farmer's market podcast, and I'm mixing my two loves together, and I like doing the farm tours. And what I've realized by being at the market and doing just even the small markets is you've got a short window. So what I'm really excited about is extending that window by doing this podcast for our local area here in the upstate of South Carolina. I'm only talking to farm, and there's a ton. I did not realize there are a ton of farmers in this area. Everybody from small to big. I mean, we've got everybody that's doing market garden to aquaponics. I mean, we got a ton of folks. We have a market in Greenville. It's called the TD Saturday Market. And they do thousands of people. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous how many farms and how many people are at this market. But our Greenville's an up-and-coming city. It's a big city. I say it's a big city. It's a big city in terms of the smaller towns around, but it's really not a big city. It's kind of like a local feel. And it was actually listed as like one of the top 10 cities in America to move to live like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But I'm excited because I'm doing the podcast, which gets me in touch with more farmers, which actually gives me another, you know, platform in which to talk about what I'm doing. My big thing is mainly sticking with my greens, my lettuce and my arugula and my kale. I'm curious to see how the cucumbers are going to do again this year. So I'm doing cucumbers. I'm really excited about doing that. But my biggest challenge has always been succession planting.
It's me all, 'cause too.
You miss a week. Oh man, you just messed up the schedule. So, and if you just miss time, okay, your harvest was supposed to come in this week and it's not, you know, it's not, you've tasted it, it's not ready. So you're like, okay, I got to push it off another week. And then you go, oh, so what am I going to have at the market this week? So succession planning is something I want to really focus in on. My wife, she says she's got this plan. She simplified it for me. And again, I'm a big believer in simplifying it. She's got this plan. I've got a secret weapon though. I talked to a farmer who is raising earthworms, or not earthworms, I forgot what worms, but she's a worm farmer. So I got an episode where she's talking about her worm farm. She's an organic worm farmer, and she has got a product that I have no doubt is going to help me out. So I'm looking forward to trying her products in my gardens in order to grow organic produce. So that, I mean, and it's a female-owned company here in the upstate of South Carolina, one of only a handful in this area, if not the state. And I know it's one of only a few that's totally female owned. So it's going to be a cool show to do. It's going to be cool to try her product. It's going to be cool to see what she's doing. And she's part of a pilot program here in South Carolina that is very different and interesting. So if you're interested in learning about that, you know, go to Farmers Market Podcast. You can find it on FDAfarms.com and listen to the show. I haven't put them out there just yet. I'm still in the launch process, which you know how this works. You've been doing this for a while. So I'm trying to library a few before I launch them. And I'll probably ask you if you can just make a mention here and there. But that's what I'm looking for. I'm really excited because it's different and it just gets me jazzed up. So.
Cool. Well, I'm always for more podcasts out there. the more we can spread the word, the more we can teach people, the better. So do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well this season or didn't go the way you thought it was gonna? I know you talked a little bit about one challenge.
Tomatoes. So, you know, when you're growing, you kind of want to grow a variety of vegetables simply for yourself, because you want to, you know, obviously eat different things, but just so you can, as a farmer or as a planter, as a grower, you want to be able to try different things to see if you can do it. So when I first started out last year, I wasn't thinking necessarily, I didn't have all my facts and I was still learning. So I wasn't thinking of spacing, in terms of growing tomatoes, and I grew it in a small hoop house, and it quickly overran the hoop house. So when you walked in, you kind of had to push away the vine, and I trimmed as much as I possibly could, but it just kind of you know, blossomed everywhere, and the bees are in there, and so that didn't work out so well. So I thought, you know what, this year I'm going to do it differently. You know, I'm going to do it different. I'm going to grow tomatoes, not necessarily for the market, because I know there are growers that have great looking tomatoes and they taste great. I'm not really doing it for the market. I was doing it for me, a little selfishness. But I grew three different types. I grew beefsteak, and I grew what's called a Pisano, which is kind of like a Marzano type tomato, for basically tomato paste and that kind of stuff, sauces. And then I grew what's called a Juliet tomato. It's kind of like a teardrop tomato. The bad thing about it is I wasn't paying attention when they were starts, and I got them kind of all mixed up. So I didn't label correct. That's another thing, labeling. That'll get me every time. But I didn't label them correctly. So I had kind of in my rows, I had a mixture of Pisano with Juliet and beefsteak, and I think there was some kind of cross pollination stuff going on, because they didn't exactly turn out the way I thought, and I think the Juliet didn't come out the way it was supposed. Anyway, we still had tomatoes, but not what I had anticipated, and it didn't produce like I was. You know, the beefsteak were just horrible. I just couldn't get them to grow right. The Pisano came out okay and was able to can and jar a bunch. But like I said, the Juliet and the beefsteak. So, you know, you live and you learn. If you never try, you'll never know. So I tried it, and now I know that I messed up. And so now I'm back to square one when it comes to tomatoes. But I do like. They're called Sun Gold. Are you familiar with the Sun Gold cherry tomatoes?
Yeah.
They're phenomenal.
We grew some of those this year, I think.
Yeah, they taste great. They have a tangy, you know, kind of rich taste, different than like a regular red cherry tomato, but I love Sun Golds, and those are the ones I'll probably grow again this coming season. So, and I know a lot of people do winter growing. I haven't mastered that yet, and I literally took down my hoop house so I could expand my rows. I realized it was limiting my field, so I was able to get four more rows in by taking down the hoop house. So I'll have to figure out. I'm maybe going to caterpillar tunnels, but we'll see. I'm not sure. It's South Carolina. We don't get the cold like other places get.
I was wondering about that.
Not as much. In the upstate, we get a little bit more than most, but it's really unique in Greenville County. And again, I'm in Lawrence County, which is just south of Greenville County, but Greenville County is a pretty large county. And it's interesting that the interstate kind of dissects the county literally in half. So you could have in the Travelers Rest area of Greenville County, you could literally have the schools and the ice freeze right above the interstate. And then below the interstate, we're fine. I mean, when it happens, it's remarkable, because all the kids in the lower part of Greenville County are looking to the weather, or they're looking at the weather in the upper part. And when they know that there's ice up in Travelers Rest, they know schools are going to be closed. So so it's as far as our climate goes, we do get some ice and that kind of stuff, but it's few and far between. We barely get any snow in this part, but when it does snow, it's 1 or 2 inches. It's gone within the week. It's not bad at all. And then we get a lot of rain. As a farmer and a grower, the thing I hate the most is wind. I don't like wind. It messes up a lot of things.
Do you get a lot of wind?
Are you close to the coast? No, not at all. We're on the other side of the coast, but what we get is that mountain wind. So when you get storms, and I'm up on kind of a hill and then there's a ridge. So anytime you have a ridge or a hill, you're going to get some, you know, when there's weather in the area, you'll get some wind and some bursts and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of, we don't get a lot of it, but I just don't like it just from a growing standpoint, because it does mess up a lot of things. I mean, I do overhead sprinkling, you know, so I do some, and that irrigation is a whole nother story. But I do some, I'm trying to think, the drip. Yeah. I do some drip. See, I'm still getting my terminology around. Right. I do drip on some plots or some rows, but I do mainly overhead because it was easier and simpler. But wind messes that up. So, I mean, you could have one side of your field nice and drenched with water, and then the other side's got nothing, and you're like, oh, this is not good. And I have been, again, I do it manual too. I have been known to take just one of those old gardening buckets, you know, the ones with the little head on the end that you just manually pour and it sprinkles out like it's a little shower over your head. I've gone out there and done that. So when you say I have a big area or I do a lot, not so much where I can't do that.
Just water by hand with a bucket?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. If I have to, I'll do it. If I know it needs water, it needs water. I mean, that's just the way it works, you know.
Well, we've certainly done that. My husband and I lived for the first 6 years without running water. And we, like I said, we've had our water challenges because, like, even our first well was just a shallow well and it could barely, you know, run the house and, you know, water a couple of beds, but it wasn't enough to do, you know, the lawn or the orchard or certainly not the mini farm. So I know how that goes, and I have hauled more than my share of buckets of water. So, but I know what that's like when you just have like one place or some area that really, really needs it. You just want to bring up water. Definitely, like, automatic watering drip systems is definitely something a lot of my guests have talked about.
Before we get to the root of things, let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and affiliate links.
Once you get it going,
the Organic Gardener podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like redners, gardeners, healthy eaters, vegetarians, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Hey, green future growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today.
And now let's get to the root of things.
Anyway, this is where we get to the part of the show I call getting to the root of things. And these are kind of like, you know, kind of like a lightning.
I got
end of the thing. So do you have a least favorite activity that you like kind of got to force yourself to do in the garden?
Ooh, least favorite. You know, I would say it's probably weeding, but I don't do a whole lot of it, to be honest with you. I use the tarps, but it would probably be the weeding. That's obviously the least favorite.
How about on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I would say I like planting the starts and I like harvesting, as far as in the garden. So actually starting the process by putting them in, and there's something when you are putting a plant in the ground and you're kind of given that TLC and you're just like, all right, it's your time now. Daddy's done for the moment. You got to start doing your thing. There's something about that moment. But anyway, that's what I would say.
Aw, I like that. It's so true. They definitely there's something that like you connect with, like those little seedlings become like your little babies and you just kind of like cheer them on and want to help them. But yep, they got to kind of do their own thing too. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received, Stefan?
Oh, that I've ever received? Yeah. That's a good one. I think it's to keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate things. And I have a tendency to do it. The irrigation is a good example. I complicated it to the point where I said, you know what? Forget this. I'm just getting my hoses and I'm hooking up my hoses and I'm running a sprinkler. So I would say keeping it simple. And that advice has been given to me in so many different areas, whether it be in broadcast, whether it be in radio, whether it be in fragrance production. Keeping it simple, sales. They always tell you keep it simple. If you can keep it simple, you're going to save yourself a lot of energy and a lot of stress. And let's say you can fix simple. You can't fix complicated.
Well, don't you know that? That's for sure. So how about a favorite tool? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what would it be? What could you not live without?
Ooh, the one tool. I will say this. I don't like weeding, but I love my little flame weeder torch because there's something about igniting a that's kind of how I do it old school. I'm basically doing what old farmers used to do when they used to light up their fields and get rid of the weeds. That's what I'm doing. And I just take a propane tank and one of those brush, I think it's called brush killers or brush burners. And the weeds, they evaporate when you put a torch on them. So that's probably the one thing, because I know you can clear a lot of stuff, but it's fun. I mean, it's like a fire, you know. It's like from back in the caveman days, like ooh, fire, good, you know. So I would say that one, just because I have a couple, but that one I love.
Cool. I don't think anybody said that. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden or eat from the garden? Like, what's your favorite recipe? Is it that kind of salad dressing type of thing you were talking about? Or
No, it's actually, my wife's going to kill me because she makes it. We do like a spaghetti sauce? It's like a spaghetti sauce with our squash, and we mix it with like kielbasa sausage, and then we put that over, usually it's gluten-free type noodles, but that would be, as far as taking squash straight from into a recipe, that would be one of them. But I'll be honest with you, I can eat my greens. I can literally walk through my rows and pick from different rows, and it's my salad, and I will eat it fresh right there in the field. I don't have a problem. That's probably it's the simplest recipe I know, and there's nothing better than, you know, cucumbers that have been pickled. I mean, you can call them pickles, but there's nothing better than that in a salad. And I'm a big fruity guy, so I like mixing my kale with my radishes, with my pickles, with the carrots, a little bit of celery, and I'll mix in some raisins and some cranberries. and put a little sunflower seed and maybe a couple of pumpkin seeds. You know, I just drop a handful of pumpkin seeds on there. And then the salad dressing, I have to get it for you, but I forgot what she puts in it, but it's really good. And it lasts, well, it doesn't last very long around here. It lasts a long time, you know, just storage wise. But I mean, that's what I would say. That's my favorite recipe from the garden.
I like all that because I'm a big salad girl. I'm a big salad dressing girl. And my favorite trick is Mike pickles beets for me a lot. And like in the summer, I mean, in the winter when tomatoes, like we rarely ever buy tomatoes from the store. Like even though we can't really grow a lot on our own, I just don't eat them. And like, so in the winter, I'll put those pickled beets on there and just like, I just love that. So
I haven't one crop I haven't tried yet.
How about a favorite internet resource? Like, where do you like to surf on the web?
Where do I like to surf? I'll be honest with you. I do follow, Curtis Stone's stuff, the Urban Farmer. Mm-hmm. I follow him he does a vlog and he's pretty religious about it. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Some of those guys, I'll listen to Diego, who does, I forgot what it's called, Big Farm, Small Farm, something like that. I forgot what it's called. He does a podcast. I listen to his stuff. And the reason why is because information, knowledge is power. That thing everybody, you know, has heard before. But it really is. And especially if you've never gardened or done any gardening or farming, and you're listening to guys who basically are saying the same thing. I never did it. I just started doing it and learned along the way. The Never Sink Farm, it's funny, you say resources and I think of people and farms, but the Never Sink Farm does, I think, 350 something annually as far as revenue. They do a lot. And their farm is spectacular and it's right there on the Neversink River. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I would encourage all your listeners to go check it out because it's an amazing, he was a corporate guy. He and his wife went out and they just did it from scratch. And it's amazing to see what they have now. And it's inspirational for me because I go, you know, if I keep plugging at this, my farm could be like that. And maybe I'll get my title of the king of Lawrence, you know, the lettuce king of Lawrence County.
Cool. I never heard of them. I'm checking out their website right now.
Connor Crickmore, I believe is his name. The name just came to me, but I know it's Connor Crickmore of Never Sink Farm. And again, it was because I listened to Diego. I think his last name's Footer, Diego Footer. But I listened to Diego and then I heard Curtis Stone. And then of course, Fortier up in, you know, I listened to all those guys and they kind of connected me to all these different other people. And then, so I go, oh, let me go see what he's doing. Ray Tyler does lettuce like nobody's business out of Tennessee. So it's amazing the connections. The internet has given you the ability to connect with people you would not have connected with otherwise. And if you don't utilize them, it's a lack of effort. You know, I had one farmer tell me, I don't like lazy people. There's no reason to be lazy. And as a farmer talking to another farmer, I get it. Because you can't be lazy when you're a farmer. You just can't. It's not in your DNA. But the resources are out there. You may not want to do something, and I get that. Cut your losses. Keep your life simple. And that's fine. Focus on the one thing that you do like. But, you know, I kind of use the excuse, well, you know, I didn't look that up. Well, it's not because I didn't want to look it up. I just don't want to know. I don't really care, to be honest with you. But it's not that I'm, you know, not lazy, but I just don't want that in my life.
I was just listening to, I don't know if you've heard of Marie Forleo, but she was doing this thing on like how to get whatever, anything you want. And she talks about the difference between I can't and I won't. I can find time to exercise in the morning, or I won't find time to exercise in the morning. I can find time to eat healthy snacks at night, or I won't find time. You know, she's like, you can do, and she's like, if you really want to do it, you're going to make the time for it. Just admit it that you won't do it, and then figure out either, you know, are you gonna, and are you gonna make that commitment to something, or, you know, what, like she's, you know, really into focusing down on exactly what you're saying. what do you really want? Do you really want to do it? Do you really want to become a market farmer? I got to say, watching, I have seen that guy before. I hadn't heard of it as the Never Sink Farm, but I could watch those videos all day. Those tools look so cool. And I think this guy must have studied from Jean-Martin Fortier, or maybe, I don't know, but very cool. And what a great resource for you to share with us. Thanks. How about a book or a magazine or anything like that? You can
The Urban Farmer or The Market Gardener by either one of those guys. You know, Curtis Stone and J.M. Fortier. I mean, I think it's Fortier. I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah.
But The Market Gardener, great book, a lot of details. The Urban Farmer, I like because he doesn't have land. You know, JM has some land at least, and he went out and did it. And, you know, they did it different. I mean, they were a young couple that went out and leased, you know, basically lived on somebody's farmland. Curtis Stone did it where he was doing it in his backyard, which is, depending on where you're at in the spectrum, I think Curtis Stone can give you some real practical guidelines on how you can just get started, just even if it's just one row. And, you know, that's, and so I look at those two books as probably the premier books. I mean, I even took a picture and said, you know, I don't have a farm yet, but it's these two guys right here that are going to be the ones that are going to help me get to there. Cool. Because I'm going to listen to what they say and I'm going to follow what they do and see what happens. And, you know, so far, and I would agree with you about what you're saying about the, I can't and I won't. And it's amazing to me when I tell that my kids, and I say, well, eventually there's going to be a walk-in cooler here, and then there's going to be this, and there's going to be this, and there's going to be this. It doesn't exist right now. None of that stuff exists except for in my mind. But if you keep plugging away and you say to yourself, I will have a vegetable garden in my backyard. And then the next day you say, I will have a vegetable garden. And by the way, I just started digging a patch where I'm going to plant. And then the next day you're like, I dug a little bit more. And then the next day, you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to pretend like this is going to be a row of radishes. This is going to be a row of lettuce. And now you're convincing yourself it's going to happen. And I'm a big believer in the power of the mind. I played sports when I was growing up. I played a little bit of college football, very little, and I got injured. But I'm a big believer in when a sports figure or athlete says, and they ask them, how did they do it? And they said, well, I first told myself it could be done. And once you can do that, you can convince yourself that it's going to happen. And over time, if you're working towards that goal, it will happen. There's nothing that can stop you from making it happen. If you're telling yourself it's going to happen.
I'm a big believer in that. I've been like working on this book called Dreams Do Come True for like, I don't know, 25 years now, but I definitely like,
you need to write it. You need to finish it.
God, I do need to. I've been working on it this weekend because like the last thing in it was like my trip to Paris that I took in 2016. And so I finally have some time right now. I've been painting on the pictures again and working on, but like, we never thought we would dig a well, and we dug a well. We never thought we'd have an orchard. We never thought we would be where we are now. I mean, especially like those first 6 years without running water at all. Like, we didn't even have water on our property. Like, I would live without the power again. I would do it all over again, but I would not live on a piece of property that didn't have water, at least on it, where I can go outside and like either, you know, pump it, or there's a creek or somewhere water,
right
property, but the rest of it.
No, we're a big believer in the same thing. And the great thing about where we're at, before we bought this, and there's a whole nother story, and that I'll probably tell people on the podcast, the Farmers Market Podcast, the whole story behind our property, because it's, the funny thing is, the person that made and built the house that we live in, now we'd like to redo it, don't get me wrong, but there's a story behind it. And when they had a small well, but they redid the well before we bought the property, and it's about 300 feet in the ground. And I am so thankful. And we had people check the well before we brought it, and they said, look, you guys are probably going to die three times before this well runs dry. And I said, well, that's all I need to hear. As long as you're telling me that, I'm okay. So I understand what it means when you're struggling to have the one essential thing that we all need, and that's water. So I get it, and I totally understand. I'm just thankful that we didn't have that issue, but we feel the same way. Without water, you're pretty much toast.
Yeah, you can't really haul water to a garden. I mean, you can grow some things. And I did actually, like, one of my most downloaded episodes is this woman, Kathy O'Leary, who lived in Idaho, who sold garlic at the farmer's market. And she did haul water to her garlic crop down a hill crazy, like, for years. But, you know, it was just one crop. But it's not like, I don't know. I mean, we hauled water and grew food for us and lettuce and a little bit here and there every year. But for the most part... Yeah, our well's 560 feet deep. I think I will be peeing for that long after I'm dead.
Right,
I don't know if we're ever going to pay that puppy off, but we have it now, so you know, we're growing as much as we can grow with it. I'll tell you, my husband, I mean, we've seen massive growth. Like 2 years ago, I think he grew like four times as much food as he'd ever grown. Last year, for sure, he grew 10 times, if not more. I mean, he's definitely the amount of food that Mike's producing more. So if he does decide he wants to go to a market farm, I'm sure he will get there. But his big goal has just been growing enough of our produce that we don't really have to buy any produce, or very limited. And I'm a big, like I said, I'm part rabbit, so I eat a lot of produce.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to get that. We do like a little variety in our life. So it's like my wife says, we can only eat so much kale. I'm like, yeah, I know. I probably should mix it up just for us. So that's another vision is I have a kind of another side little plot that will be like the family plot. So we'll mix and match and just, you know, not enough to take to a market, but enough to go, okay, we've got variety in our life. We've got this, we've got this, we've got this, and it's all growing right here.
Exactly.
I'm fine.
So do you have any advice for listeners about business or anything? I mean, we've talked quite a bit about it, and actually maybe we should just go to my final quote. Or do you want to say anything more about your podcast, or just like, this is kind of where I ask like any business questions.
No, you know, business is the same no matter what industry you're in. And I've been in a multitude of them, and it's no different than if you're watching Shark Tank tonight, or you're going to a local farmer's market. You've got to find a need that people have, and then you've got to find the customers who have that need, and then you've got to fulfill that need. And you wrap that all up in customer service. And by customer service for farming is if you can tell people what you're doing, how you're doing it, and why it's different, and why they should buy from you, not buy at your stand, but buy from you, the farmer or the gardener. If you can do that, you're going to do very, very well no matter what business you're in, whether it's craft making or whether it's making soap or whether it's growing vegetables. And that is from experience. I've had to promote all kinds of things in television and broadcast. Some of that stuff I would never touch with a 10-foot pole. But I've also, you know, had to promote and sell products that I believe in and knew exactly how they were created. Fragrance products. I mean, so, and now growing and selling vegetables, if you know all of those things, the need, the customers and where they're at and how you can fulfill that need, and you wrap it in customer service, that is probably the best business advice I can give to my children, to your listeners, to anybody that ever asked me for advice. And you know what they say about advice. It's like, unless you're asked, you never give it. So if that's the advice I would give.
Perfect. Okay, here's my final question. It's a doozy. Sure. If there's one change you'd like to see, Stefan, to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
You know, I think the biggest issue is knowing what you're eating and where it comes from. As far as when it comes to food, I think that is huge. I think we've all been conditioned to just eat right out of the box. And I heard heard a saying or somebody mentioned it on some video, and they were talking about we eat everything out of a box and everything's done out of a box and stop eating out of a box. But we have, even as we as children, I mean, cereal was in a box, everything was in a box, everything. And to me, it's like I never knew where the food came from. And so our son was diagnosed with some rare bone disease, and he also has a gluten sensitivity. And so when we started dissecting where is gluten at, and this has only been in the past probably less than 10 years, I would say, you know, what is gluten? I don't know what gluten is. And most people don't. But when you start dissecting what you're eating and where it comes from, and then you understand, oh, wait a second, am I harming my body? Am I actually putting potentially cancerous causing things in my body that later I'm going to regret? When you start doing that and you start seeing people, you know, on your left and on your right in your family coming down with cancer and understanding that, is it something that we ate? Is it something that we put in our bodies that helped cause this situation? And could we have prevented it? You really start to weigh in on what's really important. And so, I mean, that's a long answer to your very short question, but that to me is really the big thing, is knowing what you're eating and where it's coming from, because too many people just don't know. And we give it to our kids. And if you know you're giving poison to your kids, that's one thing. But when you don't know, that's a whole different story.
I could say so much about that. And I kind of go, like, I've been going through this big battle with my mom because she thinks like buying organic is just like a hoax and she doesn't really need to buy organic food. But I feel like she's finally starting to come around and see. She's like, we didn't grow up eating organic food. We've always ate all the regular food. It's fine. And I'm like, Mom, they didn't put chemicals on the food when we were kids either.
Right.
Like, you don't understand what's happening to our system and what they're doing. And just like you're saying, if you don't know that there's poison in your food, or like my mom finally, like her doctor mentioned something about, well, if you're interested, what you should do is stay away from anything that has GMOs in it. So all of a sudden she's on this big, you know, look for the GMO label, not GMO free. And I'm just like, oh my goodness.
Right.
Anyway, thank you so much for sharing with us, Stefan. Do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden? I mean, you've given so many golden seeds today and just shared value, but that's just like my real final. My husband's always asked, because he's like, you have a final question, then you keep asking questions, but I don't know.
No, fine. I guess my inspiration, I take it from a lot of different people, but just from farming, I mean, if you have a vision or an idea or a concept and you never plant that vision and you never start that process, you're never going to see it grow. And so if you don't plant that seed that you have in you, and the reality of it is we all have a seed that I believe God has put in you, whatever that might be. And if you don't plant that seed and at least water it to see if it's going to grow, then I would say shame on you for taking what God has given you and not doing anything with it. So that would be my inspirational moment. I was a coach for my kids when they were growing up, and I used to, you know, not harshly, I did it out of love, but I try to motivate them to get out there and do their best. And I did it with a lot of, you know, yelling and screaming from the sideline. But the reality of it is, take that seed that God's given you, plant it, water it, and let it grow, and let that hopefully take you to wherever you're going to be in life.
Wow, that's awesome. I love all that advice. I mean, that's just really touches my heart, and I'm sure it did. Like I said, I call my listeners Green Future Growers, because we all kind of, and you just fit right in there. We all kind of believe in that, but that is so true. I feel like, especially in this day and age of politics and people, you know, complaining and blaming, and it's like, if you don't get out there and do and share your story with people, then I don't know. I kind of feel the same way. Anyway, tell listeners one more time how to connect with you, what your website is again, and how they find your podcast, which is going to launch soon.
Yes, you guys can find me at scafarms.com. That's the letters scafarms, one word, .com. And the Farmers Market Podcast, there's a page on that website. But we will be on iTunes, we'll be on Stitcher, we'll be on SoundCloud. And, of course, you can find us on the home base right there on the farm website, scafarms.com. Feel free to contact me. And let me know if there's a farmer in your area, if it's in the upstate of South Carolina, and I'll reach out to them and try to get them on the show. I'd love for you guys to be listeners of the show. I'd love to have you on as guests if you're a farmer. And I just appreciate the fact that you've given me the opportunity to talk to you about what is my new passion in life, at least in this season of my life, as the leaves fall. That is amazing. The leaves just literally fell, like a whole swath of them just fell. But anyway, that's where you guys can find me. I'm always on my farm, and it's SCA Farms right here in good old Lawrence County, just a hop, skip, and a jump from Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay, and I'm going to call that Stefan Cares About Farms. S for Stefan, C for Cares, A for About Farms, in case you couldn't quite understand that. SCA, Stefan Cares About Farms, SCA Farms.
I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was going to say, it's funny people don't know where the SCA is. It's actually the first initial of my name, my wife's name, and my son's name.
Oh.
I couldn't fit all the kids, so they got a little flighted.
I was wondering about that too. The Organic Gardener podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, gardeners, healthy eaters, strength trainers, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent to save up to 33% on your life insurance. Hey, Green Future Growers, did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got. All in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.